This is a recording for the John Milton teleconference with Florida Rock Properties Incorporated, Tuesday, May 2nd, 2017, scheduled for 1 p.m. Central Time. Excuse me, everyone. We now have John Baker, Executive Chairman and CEO of FRP Holdings, Inc., in conference. Please be aware that each of your lines is in a listen-only mode. At the conclusion of Mr. Baker's presentation, we will open the floor for questions. At that time, instructions will be given as to the procedure to follow if you would like to ask a question. I would now like to turn the conference over to John Baker. Sir, you may begin.
Good afternoon. I'm John Baker, the Chairman and CEO of FRP Holdings, Inc., and with me today are David DeVille, our President, John Milton, our CFO, and John Klopfenstein, our Chief Accounting Officer. Before we begin, let me remind you that we may make forward-looking statements during the course of this call. Such statements reflect our current views with respect to financial results related to future events and are based on assumptions and expectations that may not be realized and are inherently subject to risks and uncertainties. Future events and actual results may differ from the results discussed in such forward-looking statements. Please refer to our 10-Q and other documents filed with the SEC by the company for further information. Our net income for our first quarter of 2017 was $1,443,000 or 14 cents per share versus $1,820,000 or 18 cents a share in the same period last year. The decline was primarily driven by a $771,000 increase in loss from joint ventures as we booked expenses and depreciation during the lease-up of our Washington, D.C. apartment project, Dock 79. Now let me turn it over to our President, David DeVille, to discuss our operations during the quarter.
Thank you, John, and good day to those on the call this afternoon. I will now take you through our results for the quarter just ended March 31st. As John articulated in his opening remarks, we enjoyed another successful quarter in both of our income-producing segments, and our development segment was busy further preparing certain non-income-producing assets for income production. Relative to the asset management segment, total revenues from our building platform for the quarter just ended decreased 3.8% to $7,285,000 as a result of lower operating expenses and related reimbursements. Net operating income increased $247,000 or 4.5% over the same period last year to $5,689,000, due primarily to the acquisition of the Gilroy Road Warehouse Building in Hunt Valley, Maryland in July of 2016. We ended this quarter with a total occupied square feet of 3,525,234 square feet, an increase of 177,122 square feet, or 5.3% over the last year's same quarter. Our occupancy level was 90.8%, up 90 basis points from the previous quarter, and leased square footage was 93.9% at the end of the quarter versus 92.5% on December 31. As to same store, average annual occupancy for the quarter increased 61,048 square feet or 1.7% to 92.3%, and the corresponding net operating income for the same period increased 1% to $5,508,000 from $5,454,693. Relative to the mining and royalty segment, revenues were adjusted down slightly for the quarter just ended over the same period last year by 0.9% or $16,000 to $1,762,000. This is largely due to a $112,000 decrease in royalties at our Lake Sand location, the consequence of Vulcan having fully depleted our proven reserves there. Further capital expenditures would be required by our tenant to change their mining plan and realize more than 3 million tons of probable reserves at Lake Sand, which we do not anticipate anytime soon. Total operating profit in this segment was $1,559,000, a decrease of $15,000 versus $1,000 $574,000 in the same period last year. We believe the volumes will continue at the higher levels from our locations for the foreseeable future as construction activity in Florida and Georgia continues to improve. And finally, to our land development and construction segment. As I've previously stated, this segment is responsible for seeking opportunistic purchases of income-producing properties and managing and developing our non-income-producing assets into income production. Thus, this segment generates minimal revenues but incurs significant costs to accomplish these objectives. This business segment is the main driver behind our growth. To this end, we spent a net $3.7 million and an extensive amount of time during the quarter on capital projects, including, one, the ongoing construction of a 103,653-square-foot building at Patriot Business Center in Manassas, Virginia, which as of April 1st was placed in service and is 83% leased. Two, the reconstruction of the bulkhead along the Anacostia River at our 664E property in anticipation of a few future high-rise developments similar to our riverfront project, which of note is less than a half a mile down the river. Three, working with our joint venture partner with ongoing leasing and marketing strategies for Dock 79 or Phase 1 at Riverfront. Four, pre-development activities for the next phase of Riverfront or Phase 2. And five, the conceptual planning for a planned unit development application to the appropriate authorities for our Hampstead property, which we had previously rezoned from industrial to residential in order to maximize the asset's profitability and expedite its disposition. So Phase 1, or Dock 79, began pre-leasing activity in late May of 2016. And as of April 23rd, the residential units are 71% occupied and 80% leased. And four of the five retail suites are 80% leased with occupancy scheduled for the summer of 2017. This project is currently above pro forma in effective rents and leasing absorption, with residential stabilization expected sometime in the third quarter of 2017. Last fiscal year, we finalized our joint venture agreement for the development of our remaining acreage at Windlass Run Business Park. During the most recent period, the venture has been going through the final stages of completing the entitlement process for a multi-building business park consisting of approximately 329,000 square feet of single-story office space. Land development and ultimately the commencement of the first phase of vertical construction is anticipated to begin in the summer or early fall of 2017. In conclusion, we will have some backfilling to do with some of our warehouse locations as a result of an inordinate amount of tenants that have and will be vacating during the balance of the year, but are hopeful we will prevail. The velocity of our marketplace has been strong, and barring something unforeseen, we believe it will remain for the foreseeable future. Thank you, and I'll now return the call back to John.
Thanks, David. As we have discussed previously, we are preparing the company for a possible conversion to a real estate investment trust. We converted our September 30 fiscal year to a calendar year to comply with REIT accounting rules, and we have contributed our mining reserves to a wholly owned subsidiary. Because the parent company still retains control of the underlying land itself, the portion of the mining royalties not attributable to the reserves more closely resembles ground rents, which are REITable income, as opposed to the payment for minerals, which is not. There are a number of issues we must resolve before we make the decision to convert, but the most important one will be the tax rate the company will pay if we don't convert. If President Trump's proposed 15% rate is approved by Congress, my recommendation to our board would be not to become a REIT at this time, as the tax savings would no longer outweigh the loss of financial flexibility we would give up as a REIT. Obviously, however, there will be a lot of twists and turns before that is resolved. More to come, and thanks for your patience. Finally, I want to thank Tom Baker for serving as our CEO since 2010 and wish him well with his new responsibilities at Vulcan Materials. I look forward to working with you again as your CEO. We appreciate your interest in our company and look forward to talking to you next quarter. We'd be interested in answering any questions you might have at this time.
Thank you very much. Ladies and gentlemen, at this time, we would like to open the floor for questions. If you would like to ask a question, please press star 1 on your touch-tone phone now. Questions will be taken in the order in which they are received. If at any time you would like to remove yourself from the questioning queue, please press star 2. Once again, if you would like to ask a question, please press star 1 on your touch-tone phones now. Our first question will come from Richard Earlson, RCS Asset Management.
Could you tell us what the approximate percentage number of three-bedroom apartments at Dock 79 is and one-bedroom apartments?
You're talking about the number of three-bedrooms versus one-bedrooms?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. I don't think we have any three-bedroom apartments.
Okay, I looked on your website. I thought I saw some for rent. Okay, and so are they mostly two-bedrooms?
They are mostly studio and one-bedroom apartments.
Okay.
With a few two-bedrooms, but there's the greater majority of them are studios or one-bedrooms.
Maybe I could ask another way. Could you tell us your average rent so far?
I don't think we've made that public. Have we? Is it on the website?
No, it's not. No, I could figure it out.
All we've said is it's above our pro forma rents, but we'll probably make that public at the time we reach stabilization.
Okay, and you still own 77% of that, is that correct?
At this time, yes, sir.
And the Hempstead property, what kind of zoning did you get through the PUD?
The zoning change was from industrial to residential. And we are seeking a PUD processing development at the present time.
Okay. So it's zoned for residential. That's quite an accomplishment. Congratulations.
Thank you.
The 664 East, I don't want to monopolize this. If you have other questions, I'll get off. 664 property. So Vulcan has an option for 5 more years. After the termination of their lease, have you got any indication whether they'll extend?
I don't think there's any question, but they would extend.
They would extend. So you really can't do anything with the property until 2026 or so. Is that correct?
That's probably correct.
Okay. And phase two of the riverfront project, so that's been approved, I take it, and you will start building in 2 years, was it? A little fuzzy on that one.
No, sir. We're waiting on the order from the Zoning Commission to become final, and we expect that in the next 30, 45 days. After that becomes final, we could begin construction as soon as late this fall or early next spring.
Okay. And is that building going to be approximately the same size as the Dock 79?
It doesn't have quite as many units. I think it's scheduled for about 255 units.
And then you have two more in your plan, is that correct, that are sort of on paper?
Pages 3 and 4, but we haven't finalized exactly what they will be.
Okay, and this is my last question. Of the subsidiary that in which you put Vulcan, how will you account for that if you become a REIT? So you'll have operating income. And I guess under REIT standards, you can have some. Can you tell us what the rents could be? And if you can't, could you tell us how you'll account for it?
Well, sir, at this point in time, if we make a re-election, the amount that is paid for the reserves and attributable to that will go into income as a taxable REIT subsidiary. So it will be taxed as a C-Corp, as a subsidiary of the REIT. And as such, it will be limited to fewer than 20% of the gross assets of the combination and less than 15% of the gross income.
Oh, so that's a larger number than I thought. So possibly.
We didn't say it was going to be that large. Those are just the limits.
I see. Thank you very much. I appreciate your comments, and I'll pause.
Thank you, Richard.
Thank you. Our next question will come from Dean Paganis, Cove Street Capital. Dean, if you're on mute, would you please unmute your phone now? Okay, we'll go on to our next question from Curtis Jensen, Robotti & Company.
Hey, good afternoon, fellas.
Good afternoon.
Just a quick question on a couple of few questions, I guess. Phase two in Acacia, in terms of a construction loan, is that on the to-do list at this point? Or, I mean, is there any sense of timing and what the size of such a loan might be?
It will be some percentage of construction costs. We don't have that finalized yet, and we don't have the final terms of construction financing, nor do we have a final contract for construction.
Okay. Curtis, that's the to-do list for the summer.
Okay. And then going back to phase one, what's the plan on the construction loan for phase one? Is that just going to be refinanced somehow, and what kind of options do you have there?
We're exploring those as well, and we'll have a year or so to work that out.
All right, and then going, downriver, I guess, 664 Buzzard Point. What if Vulcan's going to be mining there for the next 5 to 10 years, what was it needed to, I mean, why did you have to lay out capital to reinforce the bulkhead or redo the bulkhead?
It's a good question, but we did it to keep the land from washing away. It was in awful shape, and we literally had to do it to preserve the land and make it usable for them as well. We get a nice rent from them. They're actually in the concrete business on that property, and so they've got trucks running over it, and it was a safety issue as much as anything else. But it's money you wish you didn't have to put out, but we did.
Is there a possibility that you could negotiate with them in 5 years and say, you know, give them some upside as to if you could accelerate development there given what else is going on? I think the Coast Guard building is getting redeveloped, and obviously DC United and...
Absolutely. I mean, you know, obviously there's a possibility of doing anything. That will be a very special ready-mix plant site location, and so it'll be an interesting negotiation if we can get it done.
Maybe one of the more valuable ready-mix plants in the country.
Right.
And it just... You know, Washington, D.C. generally, what's your best sense of, I guess it seems like there's a fair amount of new supply, and what's your sense of kind of like job growth and the new supply and absorption trends, a lot of competitive product around, you know, relative to the kinds of things you're developing?
There has. This is David DeVilliers. We've been actively involved in watching, you know, D.C. grow from a populist standpoint. What's been happening down in the southeast, which is the quadrant that we're operating in, has been quite significant over the last several years. And the word on the street is there's still a pretty good run rate left to develop and also to from a supply and a demand level. So we're being cautiously optimistic about the future, but we think that we've got a pretty good plan and certainly a pretty good location.
We have gotten to this point in 8 months, so we're at 80% leased in 8 months, which certainly was ahead of our projection. You know, we sit down with our partner and go through the marketing studies before we'll, you know, actually kick it off. But, you know, my gut feel to you is that when we see those numbers, we're gonna find them to be even better than what we saw when we kicked off phase one. And the one thing, you know, we know for sure is that being on the river has a real attraction as opposed to being even a block or two back. And so we feel like we've got a really niche opportunity here, and it's something that will always be, you know, in high demand.
Yep. And then just last thing is, any more color on kind of, I think you had, somebody had talked about the, you know, kind of relatively high level of lease expiries in your flex industrial, and any more color on that, and, you know, how might your sense as to how things might go this year?
Not really. We have, you know, it's an ebb and flow business, and we've been pretty fortunate over the years to maintain a pretty strong occupancy level. We're in submarkets that are pretty strong in and around the Baltimore, Washington marketplace, and it's just part of the, you know, it's just part of the ebb and flow of our business.
But we've got a slug of businesses coming open. It, you know, it takes us 15 to 20 months on average to, when we don't relet it immediately, to get it filled up. And I would anticipate that that's what would be the scenario here.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much. Keep up the good work.
Thank you, Curtis.
Thank you. Again, as a quick reminder, if you would like to ask a question, please press star 1 on your touchtone phone now. Our next question will come from Richard Earlson, RCS Asset Management.
Yeah, I just had a couple follow-up questions. Could you give us a little color on the Fort Myers Vulcan facility?
Yeah, we've got 1,900 acres. 1,900 acres of land down in Fort Myers. It's been under lease, you know, for a long, long time to Vulcan and to his predecessor, Florida Rock. And we just found out literally this week that all the permits have been achieved for that property. In the first phase of that property, there is 105 one-acre residential lots that will be lakefront lots, and it will become available when that first phase mining is done. You know, obviously that's up to Vulcan, and they'll mine it as fast as is logical for them. But it is particularly good rock, and we expect them to get on it. And while we don't see in this year any dramatic change in royalties, we expect that the royalties from that operation will pick up pretty substantially beginning next year. And then, you know, in 5 or 6 years, we'll be at a position where we can start developing those lots, which should have a tremendous value.
Is that held in the mining subsidiary?
Yes,
it is. Could you give me a little bit more color on your comment on if the tax rate goes to 15%? I missed whether it was long-term or the corporate rate, and why that would have such a bearing.
Well, think about it this way. If you convert to a REIT, of course, what you're trying to do is make your income tax-free to your shareholders. And you can distribute out, and what we would probably, I think it's 90% is the requirement that you've got to distribute out 90% of your pre-tax income to your shareholders as a REIT. If the tax rates went to 15% from 39%, you know, you've really taken a lot of the motivation of avoiding taxes out of the picture, because the give and take is you give up a lot of financial flexibility when you become a REIT. You have to dividend out 90%. You've got to dividend out initially all your earnings and profits going back since the beginning of the company, which, you know, hurts your liquidity a little bit. So it's, you know, it's one of those things where you get all the facts together, you make your judgments, and you say, this makes the most sense now that we know all these things. And I just wanted to bring it up, and I appreciate you asking it again to so we could shine the light on it. You know, what we're shareholders in this company just like you are, and what we want is for it to be the most tax-efficient way to benefit our shareholders while still leaving us with the ability to grow and create value. So it'll be a balance. It'll be a decision we'll make probably, you know, at the end of this year. But if we don't make it at the end of this year, we'll make it next year. And so what I would tell you is we teed it up to where we can make that decision and go forward as a REIT, but there's nothing that would require us to do it if you know, the corporate tax rates go down to a very low level.
So if the corporate tax rate went to 20, you'd reevaluate it, and 15 is an outlier, I take it.
That's the number the man threw out, and I think I would agree with you.
Okay. And my last question, can you tell me, so I don't have to go figure out how many two-bedrooms and one-bedrooms there are at Dock 79?
But we'll get you that right now.
Okay. I can see the rents on your website, and you're right, of course, there are no three-bedrooms.
There are 65 two-bedrooms, 14 junior two-bedrooms, and then the rest are one-bedroom and studios.
Can you tell me how many studios or how many one-bedroom?
Oh, sure. The studios are 45.
45, okay. I can figure out the rest.
And then the rest are one-bedrooms. There's 8 that are one-bedroom plus 10, and then the rest are one-bedroom.
So you've been getting close to $4,000 for two-bedrooms per month. That's incredible. Wow. All right, that's all the questions I have. Thank you. You guys are doing a great job, by the way. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Richard.
Thank you. Our next question will come from Bill Chen, Rhizome Partners.
Hi, guys.
Hey, Bill.
Hi. A lot of my question has been answered. I was just wondering if we do elect to convert into a REIT, do we have an estimated amount of how much need to pay out, and do you have a view whether you will pay that out in stocks versus I think the rule is it has to be at least 25% cash and at most 75% stock. Do you have any so really kind of two questions. One, what would that purging distribution be, do you have any thoughts on, what that cash stock mix would be?
Bill, John Milton. We don't have an absolute answer for either one of those yet. On the first issue, we're looking back and very carefully at how we allocate the earnings and profits in connection with the spinoff we accomplished. And there may be an alternative to allocate those in a different manner that would lower the dividend requirement. We don't have an answer on that yet, and we're investigating that. And the second answer is we're still up in the air as to how much we would pay in cash or stock, and we'll let you know when and if we make the decision.
Got you. If I may ask a follow-up question, I think some time ago we have there's been the possibility that the aggregate royalties may be potentially restructured into some sort of volumetric payment, which would qualify it to be readable. Is that still an option on the table, or is that no longer an option?
That's really not an option at this stage. What we've done is we've basically used a taxable REIT subsidiary structure to take a substantial portion of the royalty income that will not qualify as REITable income, and then we'll keep that value underneath the threshold required to remain a REIT.
Got you. Okay. Those are my questions.
Thanks.
Thank you again. Quick reminder, to ask a question, you may press star 1 on your touch-tone phone now. Speakers, at this time, we have no further questions in the queue.
Well, thank you all for your interest in our company. As you can tell, we're excited about where we stand. We're excited about the D.C. market and what that means, and we look forward to talking to you next quarter.
Thank you very much. Ladies and gentlemen, at this time, this conference is now concluded. You may disconnect your phone lines and have a great rest of the week. Thank you.